Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. Listeners to Vox Novus are conscious and compassionate people, often in the role of lovingly caring for others, family, and friends. Sometimes this comes at the cost of self-care and occasionally caretaker burnout. How may we start the conversation of self-care for caretakers? My guest this week on Vox Novus, mental health advocate Robert Allen, says self-care is crucial for health and many people do not actually understand what it is or how to use it. Robert Allen is a mental health professional, growth coach, and author with multiple advanced degrees in the areas of business, counseling, education, divinity, healthcare, and leadership. With more than 20 years of experience in both the public and private sector, Robert has served in various industries from education, military, law enforcement, business, mental health, and ministry. He's the founder and CEO of New Dimensions Consulting Services, a company that specializes in helping businesses, entrepreneurs, and everyday people maximize their talents and leadership by engaging them through innovative mental health initiatives, trainings, and retreats. His website is rwallenbooks.com, and he joins me this week to share his path and his book, Self-Care. Let's start the conversation. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Robert Allen. Good evening, Robert.
Good evening. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experience and wisdom, which we so desperately need in our world today. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Robert, please share with our listeners your path and how it manifested into the calling you share with us today.
Well, that's a big story, so I'll try to make it as short as possible. The long part of it is I grew up in the inner city of Detroit, Michigan. From a young kid, I lost my dad when I was 8 years old, and I was raised in a way where I was taught to always do, always work hard, you know, work harder. It was a phrase that used to be given back in the day. Too much idle time is the devil's workshop. So always stay busy. And so I learned how to stay busy, how to stay active, definitely how to be competitive. Growing up with a lot of cousins and family who were very competitive. But I was never taught how to slow down, how to take time for myself, how to practice self-care. And so a lot of my journey has been learning what it means to take care of myself.
How did you embrace that in your path and recognize and learn it?
Well, funny story. I had finished my bachelor's degree and I started off in education and I was going on to get a master's in counseling. And so when I got accepted into the program and the director of the program addressed the class, it was about 30 of us. She said, "Your very first thing that I want you to do, I want you to go out and find a therapist." And I looked around the room. You know, I was that one guy. We're here to be therapists. Why do I need to go and get a therapist? She told me to come down to the front of the room. She gave me books to hold. And she was just talking to the class while she was handing me books. After a minute or so had went past, my hand started shaking. I end up eventually dropping books. And she looked at me and said, "You see all of these people in this classroom?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "When were you going to ask any of them for help?" Then the second thing she asked, when were you going to tell me to stop giving you books? And so that was one moment that really pierced me to my core to let me to help me to understand, one, I can't do it all. Two, I do need to ask for help. And three, what I'll call the power of no.
Absolutely. Setting boundaries, setting healthy boundaries is so integral to our lives today.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that for me, I had to learn. You know, a lot of things are cultural, depending on, you know, how you grew up in the family, where you are in the family, and in terms of pecking order. Setting boundaries is not clear for a lot of people.
At many different age levels also, because that was something that was hard for me. I'm going to go on to my 69th year in January, and it really was only to the last couple of years that I learned that the word no is a complete sentence.
Yes, absolutely. And I like to say the power of no, or no, not right now.
I have to share something with you. I was going to save this till later when we were offline, but I think it's so appropriate. So last year, in the process of learning that healing power of no, I actually wrote a poem called The Healing Power of No. And with your permission, I'll share it at this time.
Absolutely.
A time comes for choosing rather than losing the essence that makes us so. And in the bestowing, there's power in knowing the freedom that comes with no. When said with compassion, not angry in fashion, and letting the self-love flow, there's a sense of renewing and deep soul imbuing the awareness that comes with no. So with a gentle voice and the power of choice and the courage to make it so, I'm still here, my friends. There's no means in this end. Just the healing that comes with no.
I love it. And I'm going to ask your permission to use that in the second volume of self-care, which will be Self-Care, Let's Continue the Conversation.
Absolutely. It'll be my pleasure to share that with you.
Thank you so much.
As you open Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation, you share some rather daunting information about stress. What are some of the major stressors we face today and the possible outcomes when not addressed?
Well, stress is one of those things that happens and that we don't know it happens. So for instance, let's say that you have a stressful job. Let's say you're in manufacturing or technology or law enforcement, military, and you're used to having a certain level of stress that is day-to-day. Just that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. That was me. And so it was hard for me to identify when I was stressed because I operated at such a high level of stress that I didn't know I was being stressed out. And so when you look at healthcare workers, when you look at COVID and what COVID has done over the past year, you've seen people So I'll take it back a little bit from a mental health background. What I saw more than anything was people coming in for mental health that didn't necessarily suffer from depression or anxiety. They suffered from, I'm stressed out. I have, you know, a terrible work-life balance. I just don't know. So stress is, according to the CDC, 110 million deaths occur a year due to stress-related ailments.
I'm sorry, please repeat that. 100 and what?
110 million people die each year from stress-related ailments, whether it be a heart attack, panic attack, which leads to respiratory distress, strokes. Many of these things have been correlated to stress. And so on a everyday basis, we all deal with stress, but then you have certain things like compounded stress. So for instance, if you move to a new state or a new city, that's one thing that you have to transition your family. But what if you move to a new city or a new state with a new job? Those are two separate stresses. What about someone who had a loved one lost, or someone who now has to take care of an ailing father, mother, or family member? These are all stresses that we assume as responsibilities, and we are very careful to say, no, it's not stress. This is my responsibility or my duty. But we forget that those things add to what we had beforehand.
Absolutely. And I know that number is staggering. If you think that 600,000 people have passed in this country in the last year because of COVID, 110 million. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Absolutely, yes. Amazing. We hear the term self-care in popular media, often without addressing the core of what it means to individuals, businesses, and communities. What is your definition of self-care?
So self-care is one of those terms that is used very generically. You know, a lot of times this have been associated with a vacation or just a spa or getaway. The way that I define self-care, and self-care, let's start the conversation, is filling your cup in your most needful space, which simply means that self-care is progressive. It's not a one thing fits all. Self-care is progressive. So as we age, as we move to different stages in our life, we're going to need different things to fill our cup in that most needful space. And that is what self-care is.
So it's really related to age. It's related to the circumstances of life. It's related to our employment. It's related to our family, literally every aspect of life.
Every aspect of life. So we'll take COVID just for a second. There were many people who lost loved ones. I lost loved ones due to COVID. I had COVID and I ended up in the ICU and stayed there for a couple days. And what we must understand is at different stages of our life, we need certain things. What I needed for self-care in my 20s is quite different than my 30s and my 40s. When you get married, what you need for self-care is going to be different than when you were single. When you have children, things definitely change with how you need to take care of yourself and what's going to be most meaningful in that space.
How does the lack of self-care affect us as individuals, as family members, and in the workplace?
Well, when we don't practice good self-care, and it's related back to stress. So let's say I've been working 40 hours a week. I get home, I take the kids to practice, or one kid has basketball practice, another kid has cello practice. After I do that, I bring them home. I have to get dinner done. If you get into that repetitive cycle, even no matter how good you get at managing that, you have to ask yourself, when did I take time for me? So when people don't practice good self-care, irritability, easily agitated, depressed, people suffer from stress and panic attacks, and these things go hidden, and we just continue to do the same thing every day. We're the hamster on the wheel that continue to do the same thing. Even when people take vacations, and I was guilty of this, I'll say, I just need to get away. Come on, we're going to take a family vacation. On the family vacation, I spent more of the time making sure that the kids' needs were met, that my wife's needs were met. And then by the time that was done, it was time for us to come home. And I know you've heard the term, you need a vacation from the vacation.
Yep.
Because you need that time to rest before you even go back. And so just taking that one example, if I needed to get away and needed to relieve myself of stress and all these, and I went on a vacation and cared for everybody else, when I got home and go back to work, I'm still going to be tired. I'm going to be exhausted. Depending on what you do, you're going to come back to 400 emails and you've never really taken a break for yourself.
Absolutely. And in your book, Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation, you talk about how all of these things in life become habits for us. How do we recognize those habits and then turn them into self-care habits?
Well, I think later on in the book, I talk about accountability partners and mentors. A lot of times we don't know or realize what we're doing and what habits we have. So for instance, this is funny, just last week, my son was making fun of me. He said, "Dad, every time you go into the kitchen, you open the refrigerator door, you rub your stomach, you close the door, and then you open it again." And I said, "No, I don't." I said, "I don't do that." He said, "Dad, yes, you do." My wife started laughing. I said, "Do I really do that?" She said, "Honey, yes, you do that every single time you open the refrigerator." That was something that I didn't know. And if I didn't have people to point that out, I would have kept doing that. Now that's a simple habit. How many habits do we have that are not very good habits that we don't know about? Because a habit is just used to breathing oxygen. It's as simple as that. So how many habits do we have that are not healthy for us that we don't know about?
So getting back to that point, and I was going to address this later, but as long as we're talking about it now, talking about a mentor and an accountability partner, what is the difference between the two and how do they interface with this process?
And so I have five accountability partners. And accountability partners, as I speak about in the book, are people that you give permission to help you in certain areas of your life. Now, let's be clear, they are not your therapists. They are not necessarily friends or family, but there are people that you have a relationship with that you know that will mean you well. So one of my accountability partners, one of my things is patience. That's one thing that I continuously try to work on. So my accountability partner is one that has a good amount of patience, has a good sense of patience. And so I will talk to my accountability partner and say, "Hey, I'm feeling anxious," or, "You know, I need to run something by you to see if I'm being impatient. Is this something with me?" And we process that together. And they let me know, "Well, you know, how could you have done that better? Or what, you know, help me develop questions that I have to ask myself to come to a conclusion. I do that and I need to address it maybe in this manner." So the difference between an accountability partner and then a mentor is one who takes time and invests in you. And so when I was in the hospital serving as a manager of spiritual care as a board certified chaplain, there was a gentleman who sat at like the top level of a spiritual care. And he was an ACPE supervisor, which means a educator that really helped chaplains go through the process of becoming chaplains through a formal process. And it was a person that I said, "I really want to be where you are one day." So I developed a relationship with this mentor. And it was rules and guidelines to the relationship. If I saw where, you know, he was, then there were certain things that he and I discussed. We met on a monthly basis. We talked about professionalism. We talked about my emotional intelligence as well, and what it would take to get to where he is and all of the elements in between. And so I have several mentors that mentor me in various areas. I caution people to have just one mentor because then you're pouring all of yourself into this one person and they may only have one area expertise. Whereas when you spread it out across maybe three or four mentors, they can pour into you differently and hold you accountable, which is the major part, being held accountable.
So in essence, an accountability partner is someone that you ask to really call you on the mistakes that you make or the things that you repeat that you're trying to eliminate in your life.
Yes.
And the mentor is truly the teacher, someone who you want to emulate and embrace their teaching as part of your personal and professional growth.
Exactly.
Wonderful. How do we pick them?
You know what? I had a conversation with many friends of mine in leadership, and we talked about mentors. We're used to having coaches and not having mentors. My mother, again, I lost my dad when I was 8, and my mother, being a single mother, she wanted to put me in various programs. And when you're in programs, you have coaches like basketball, football, you have coaches, and coaches help show you how to play the game better and the rules of the game and certain things like that. And so as a youth, I had several coaches who I was close to, who invested in me, but I didn't have any mentors until I got to high school. And my godfather ended up becoming my very first mentor. And that showed me, okay, I have a responsibility. If I want to be somewhere and I want something in life, I have a responsibility to seek those people out and ask. So the example given in the hospital, I sought him out and asked him, and I began to build the relationship with him. And consequently, he was the person in the foreword of the book who wrote the foreword of Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation.
His name is Robert Allen. His book, he just mentioned, Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation. Robert, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
They can go to www.rwallenbooks.com. And Allen is spelled A-L-L-E-N. There they can get Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation, the 12-week reflective journal that comes along with it, and other merchandise such as our Do Not Disturb Self-Care Mode t-shirt as well.
We'll be back with more of Robert after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Robert Allen. His book is called Self-Care. Let's start the conversation. Robert, in your book, you share there are varied and unusual styles of self-care. How may we identify the aspects that work best for each of us?
You know what? A lot of it is going to be trial and error. What I try to do, I think for me, there were certain things that I used to love to do in high school and in college that once I had a family, I just stopped doing them because I was trying to take care of the needs of my family. And so a lot of things fell by the wayside. So my first thing would be for people to reengage things that they used to love, that they just stopped doing for whatever reason. And then the second thing would be to write a list of things that you always wanted to do, but you just never really got a chance to do those things. And I will start with those two lists first and begin to see which things really speak to you at that particular stage in your life and commit to doing it.
And what are some of the unusual ways?
So for me, I am competitive. And so some of the things that I like to do is really doing things. I love to play football. So for me, sometimes self-care, me doing some of the things that I love, getting out with the guys or people I don't know and playing a pickup game of football. Just a couple weeks ago, I went to the beach. And I absolutely love volleyball, love beach volleyball, and met some individuals on the beach and we started playing a game. Two things happened. One, I realized that they were half my age. So by game two, I was just like, can we take a break? And then, but then two, I realized I had not played beach volleyball probably since I was in college. And it was something that I absolutely love to do. For some people, it may be arts and crafts, camping. For others, it's mountain biking. For some, it's sleeping. Yeah. You know, for people who don't get enough sleep and they're just going, maybe a retreat that's going to take you away where you can simply have no distractions or no responsibilities, and you can just sleep.
And of course, meditation.
Meditation, meditation some, practice yoga. Mm-hmm. So for me, there's not really necessarily a wrong way because it's going to differ based on what people need. So I'll give you this for example. For the introvert, sometimes they don't need more quiet because that's what they're used to. To an introvert or someone who stays secluded to themselves, maybe being around people to be energized is what they need for self-care.
Mm. Interesting. And so, turn it around.
Yeah. So sometimes for the extrovert, they need to push back. For the introvert, they need to move toward. And so again, it depends on the person. It depends on what they're lacking and what they need.
Does self-care for men differ than self-care for women?
Well, one, I think moreover, men do not practice self-care well. Out of all of my friends and men that I've just had the conversation with, I said, I've asked many males, what does self-care look like to you? What does it mean? And I get the strangest looks, like, what do you mean? What does it mean? It's, you know, but then they're never able to define it or really give me good examples outside of going on vacation. Mm-hmm. So for me, culturally speaking, the male is the head of the house. Whether we talk about culture or spirituality, the male is the head of the house and they have certain responsibilities. And, you know, the bulk of the weight falls on the male or the shoulders of the male. So when you have that understanding or that interpretation, it becomes very hard to care for yourself because you're trying to manage every single aspect of life in your household when you can't. So for men, I think really understanding and defining self-care and what that means to them. And if they borrow from the book, what do you need in your most needful space? Mm. What do you need to fill your cup? And so I think once we ask that question, then people can say, well, most of the time they're going to say, well, I don't know. Then we can dig deeper and say, let's identify some of those things.
For those of us of a certain age, often referred to as the golden years, of which I know well, how do we find self-care strategies that work for us?
You know, so my mother has been taking care of my cousin who has cerebral palsy, and he's also blind for at least the last 20 years. She's been his
God bless her. God bless her.
Yes. She's been his caretaker, and waits on him hand and foot. And the love and the bond that they have is just, you know, it is what it is. And for my mom, I try to let her know, Mom, taking care of him is also part of taking care of him is also you taking care of yourself. And I think that she realized that when she had to have a procedure done, and she realized, I can't do this for the rest of my life, just energy wise. And so even in my own family, which is, you know, very close to home, and my mother is it in the golden years.
That's very respectful of you. I think if you had said anything differently, she might have gotten upset.
Yes, and I had to be careful. But for her, what her and I conversation has been like, Mom, what are some things that you've always wanted to do that you just didn't get around to? And we began to talk about those things, and she began to share some of the things. And then she said, you know what? I haven't really thought about it. I really don't know. And so a lot of her and I conversation has been, you know, let's identify some of those things. She said, well, I've always wanted to travel. Well, Mom, now is the time. It was interesting, and I'll share this with you. As a chaplain, I was part of the ER, or I was the chaplain for the ER. And before a trauma came in, you know, I will always meet with the team. On this particular time, they said that the ambulance was about 15 minutes out. And so we were just having a conversation and with the nurses, and I've asked them, what was the most beautiful place you've been? So some of the people said, you know, this place, that place. And then one of the older staff members said, well, I haven't got a chance to go anywhere yet because, you know, I had to take care of my grandkids and I'd had to do this, and I'm just going to wait till I retire. And then one of the other nurses said, why would you wait till you retire when you won't be able to enjoy the things just because of aging that you could have done in your 40s and 50s? And she looked and said, I've never realized that.
Yeah.
Success story was, based off that conversation later that year, she booked like 4 or 5 vacations, and my nickname is Chap. And so she said, Chap, I'm getting out there and I'm going to live life. So what I've been saying, to a lot of people, now's the time to live life, not just have life, but to live life. And to live it abundantly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have 4 chapters in your book that address physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual self-care. Let's start with physical. What are some of the ways you had mentioned about the pickup game of volleyball on the beach? What are some of the other ways that physical self-care can be manifested?
You know, whatever helps you healthily exhaust energy or use energy in a way that's going to be pleasurable for you. So for me, I love to go to the gym. I love to work out. Whenever I have stress or have those days, I can go to the gym, work out, and it kind of eases the pressure, eases my mind. So it's good for our body. So it makes me feel good. Now that I'm, you know, over my 40s, I can't work out as hard as I used to, but you know, if it's mountain biking you like, if it's jogging, if it's taking a walk, if it's practicing yoga, some people practice yoga for exercising, whatever it is that's going to help you physically, wrestling, taekwondo, karate, any of those things that will help you physically is something that will be a positive part of self-care.
Now, before we talk about mental self-care, I just want to add that each of your chapters ends with a reflection. So if somebody were reflecting on physical care, what would the reflection include?
So if I'm reflecting on physical self-care, one of the things that I will ask myself is, how often do I do it? How often do I allow myself to, you know, practice physical self-care, something that I can do physically by myself or even with a partner? And that would be the number one thing. Second, is it benefiting me? You know, what am I getting out of it? Am I coming through just to, for the sake of saying I went to the gym to burn some calories, or is it really filling my cup in my most needful space? So sometimes, you know, some people hate the gym. It's just like, it's boring. I only do what I want to when I feel like it. So for them, maybe going to a class, a workout class, whatever that may be. Some people I've known who've actually got into kickboxing and taekwondo later on in life because it allows them to be with other people.
Hmm. And you had mentioned having a partner in the physical self-care. So for example, I know there's a group of folks here in my area who go out, again, golden year folks, who go out and do power walking every day, and they do it as a team so they can support each other.
Absolutely. And so that's why I said, either with a group, either with a partner. And this goes back to the self-care with the introvert needing people to help come out of their shells. So self-care, even though primarily is things that you do by yourself, there's certain aspects of self-care that includes other people to help you. Because again, when you look at the definition, what fills your cup in your most needful space? So if you need a coach or a partner or group to help you in your goal for physical self-care, by all means, that is what you do for your self-care as it pertains to physical self-care.
Okay. Emotional self-care.
So, what we see a lot in the mental health field is our emotions. What are we doing to help minimize emotional irregulation? And so for me, emotionally, what speaks to me? As I get older, I realize that I get teary-eyed on certain films that I've saw before, and I never got teary-eyed before, but now I'm very sentimental in certain ways. And so I have to pay attention to how things affect me. Being a chaplain, being a mental health professional, there's a lot of things that really press on our emotions. And we have to be willing to unpack some of those things. So as I said earlier, when I was becoming a counselor, the director of the program said, every counselor or every therapist needs a therapist, because you can't go through life without helping people and not being able to unpack your own stuff. So emotional self-care deals with, if you need an accountability partner, get them. If you need mentors, get them. If you need a therapist, please, by all means, seek a therapist. Or even a life coach or growth coach to help you along the way in terms of regulating your emotions.
Absolutely. And then mental self-care by itself, not necessarily emotion, but mental self-care.
So mental self-care, again, as we talked earlier about stress, those things work-life balance. What things affect our mental health? Burnout is very prevalent. And even coming out of COVID, what I am very cautious of, what I try to speak to people about, and especially in companies, people are ready to go back to work. They're roaring to go back to work. But be careful and be kind with yourself. Don't go back and repeat the same patterns of working 16 hours a day just for the sake of saying, I'm back at work. And then you start that stressful pattern all over again. And we know that stress affects not only how we eat, how we sleep, our sexual desires and capacities, if I can say, our attitudes and our moods, which way they swing or not. So for mental health being balanced.
And then finally on this segment, how does our respective spirituality and faith come into self-care?
And so this is going to differ again. So in the book, I even talk about atheists who don't particularly have a faith. And I talk about different religions and what faith means to them and what spirituality means to them. I wrote the book for me from a Christocentric standpoint and saying, for me to engage my faith and my spirituality is me spending time alone with God, to hear God, to listen, to be able to lament when I need to. And before coming up in ministry and as a child, it was sacrilegious to say that you could be angry with God. But I've learned through over time that we can be angry. And God is the person that we need to talk about what are some of our angers and frustrations with. So spiritually, I take time to push back. And that's my sacred time that I have to seek God and to have quiet time and stillness in areas where I need to be filled. You know, I love music, absolutely love music. So I do those things which will pour into me spiritually. I listen to preachers or pastors that helps to fill my cup. And so that is a central aspect. All four of them are, but for me, that is a core because of my faith and what I believe in.
My guest is Robert Allen. His book is called Self-Care. Let's start the conversation. We'll be back with more after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can. But it's just as important to take time for yourself. AARP can help. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this evening is Robert Allen. We're talking about his book, Self-Care. Let's start the conversation. So as we shared a little bit earlier in my introduction, in this partial post-COVID so-called new normal, what advice would you offer businesses to prevent workplace burnout and encourage employee self-care?
Well, one of the things I would say would be to not rush back to the old way of doing things so quickly. If we invest in self-care, really what it takes to fill the cups of the employees and fill our own cups going back to work. What I've said in various things is when you look at staff, we can't just allow self-care to be the nice flyer that's in the newsletter. It has to be a little bit more than that. Do questionnaires, change the way that we do things to check in with people. So if you never had huddles in the morning, have huddles, do fun little things to ask questions. So one of the things that I did in Las Vegas, when I was a manager of spiritual care, we would have these morning huddles And in the morning huddles, they would be so boring, and half the people would be on their phones, and you know, it was just not anything you really wanted to go to. It was just, oh, we got this meeting that is mandatory. And so I was able to talk to the COO, and I said, you know, is it possible to allow me to change it up a little bit? Just make it a little more fun and a more, you know, and they gave me the latitude to do that. So we started off huddle with a song, and anybody could pick a song. Most of the songs were very upbeat. And then I would do fun facts. Turn to your neighbor, and for the next 30 seconds, I want you to discuss what was your favorite song in high school? What was your favorite cartoon character growing up? What was your favorite sub? And so it began to change the atmosphere to where people wanted to be involved. People wanted to come, and they actually got energized when they came. So for companies to start thinking outside the box and implementing little things such as that, how can we begin to change the atmosphere and the culture of it just being business as usual? Can we take 5 minutes to say, hey, I want to check in. Let's do a reflective pause where we just sit still for 5 seconds and maybe practice mindfulness breathing.
You know, it's interesting because healthy and happy employees produce more.
Absolutely. So you would think that, hey, if we implemented this, you know, it will create, you know, better customer satisfaction. But what I would say is what's really meaningful is if CEOs and leaders really took part in understanding what self-care is and not just passing it down the line. So, for instance, as a leader, let's talk about the nonprofit sector for a while and the for-profit. Who does CEOs get to talk to and decompress with? How do they get to practice self-care? You know, it's easy to say, oh, you're a CEO, you make a lot of money, all of this. But then they have a lot more things that they have to oversee, a lot of more things that they have to deal with. You take the pastor in the church. Who does the pastor get to decompress with and practice good self-care with?
The assistant pastor.
No, because you're their boss. So you really can't, you know, you really can't. And so I think when leaders begin to say, hey, what is this self-care thing? Let me understand it better. Once the leader understands it, then that's when true change happened with companies. You know, I'm not 1,000% familiar with Amazon and Jeff Bezos stepping down, but I did read a couple articles, and from several of the articles I read, it said that he's really taking time to focus on the social aspects of employees and work-life balance and employees being happier. If someone at his status, which is one of the richest men in the world, is getting it and gets it, that's going to cause change in companies more than this just being the new buzzword because we're coming out of COVID. So we have to offer some program.
Absolutely. Many have been working remotely since the onset of COVID and have struggled with this new paradigm. You suggest 3 ways to improve mental health in that situation. Please share those with us.
So one is for people who have to do it, taking time out, you know, maybe changing locations. So I was one of those people who, as a mental health professional and a growth coach, I went to teletherapy and telehealth. And when I was at home, I got tired. I was tired of being at my desk. I was tired. So what I did was I got out and I went to I talked to my client and said, hey, I need a change of scenery. I'm going to move to a different office. That was one thing. Some things I did outside in a nature setting. And so finding ways that can break up the monotony and the repetitiveness of some of the things. I took more breaks. I had to be conscious to say, you know what? I'm going to wake up in the morning. I'm going to go for a jog. Now that I don't have to drive to work, I'm going to replace that drive to work with a jog for 20, 25 minutes. And so finding creative ways to say, okay, on the way home, I would have spent 30 minutes jogging. What am I going to put in that place? Maybe I'll take 30 minutes to meditate. And so you can still work from home, but you still need times where you need to get away.
And many of our listeners practice yoga, and taking that break and doing some yoga is a wonderful way of practicing.
Absolutely. So if you had a 25 minute or 30, 45 minute drive to work, take that time. I know we like to lay around in the bed, and typically, you know, most people will lay in the bed and play on the phone or whatever, but take that 45 minutes to get active in your passion. So if yoga is something you have that you love to do, you had that 45 minute drive, take that 45 minute time and do yoga.
Absolutely. There's a wonderful lyric from my era written by Justin Hayward in the Moody Blues song Question. The lyric says, "And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you." Why are so many of us wonderful caretakers for others and not for ourselves?
Because there's this underlying notion that if we take care of ourselves, that we're being selfish. And, you know, again, whether it's cultural, where you're supposed to do things, and if you're the oldest, there's what you had to do for all of your siblings. We were never taught, I don't think, that caring for ourselves is important. So again, when you get on a plane and before you travel, one of the first things they tell you in the safety briefing is, in the event of the emergency, if the cabin loses pressure, there will be masks that will drop down from the overhead compartment. Please put on your mask first before you help the others. And the reason why they talk about that is because of hypoxia, the deprivation of oxygen flow. And if we don't put our mask on first, we may fall out or pass out trying to help someone else, and then we both perish. But if we're able to put our mask on first, then we can assist more people.
Absolutely. And it's all about, you know, recognizing that we're worthy of the same love we've been giving and the same care we've been giving to others, and that we're worthy to receive it for ourselves.
And so if you take, if you went from a biblical standpoint, I speak of it in the book, Jesus himself took time away from his disciples and from others, and to spend quiet time by himself. In so many religions, in faith, whether it's Buddhist and Hindu, there was time for meditation and reflection. So we see that in various faith cultures and traditions and various exercise practices as well, where you need that space and that time for you.
Absolutely. Your company, New Dimensions Consulting Services, has recently received a wealth of praise for something called self-care training. What is it?
So what we do is we go to various companies, or we're sought out by various companies, and we customize self-care trainings and retreats. So we get to know a little bit about the company. We get to know about, you know, the culture of the company. What are some of the things that needs to be changed, or would create a better culture or atmosphere? And we customize trainings for that particular industry. So none of our trainings are cookie cutter or the same. We customize it to the customer's needs. And so we have a team of growth coaches who have various certifications in life life coach, goal coach. Some of them have mental health backgrounds. And we have artists as well, a renowned artist who works with therapeutic art and helping people paint certain aspects of things that lends to self-care.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. His book is Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation. Robert Allen, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and all of this wonderful work you do.
Absolutely. So you can go to www.rwallenbooks.com. There you could buy Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation, the 12-week reflective journal, along with other products such as the Do Not Disturb Self-Care Mode t-shirt. Now, if you order from the website, I will personally sign the book to you before it ships out. For those who are e-readers and love Amazon, you can also find it on Amazon under Self-Care, Let's Start the Conversation by author myself, Robert Allen. And Allen is A-L-L-E-N. Also, for customers or companies, if you are seeking to have a self-care retreat, if you go to the website, you can click on the link that says trainings, and it will forward you to our New Dimensions Consulting website, where you can learn more about all of the trainings that we offer. So I look forward to hearing from you and receiving emails. And I am so thankful for being on the show today.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this wisdom and experience and the message that we all need to take better care of ourselves. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.